This is 3P Theory, the podcast for AEC professionals seeking to elevate their knowledge on green building strategies and practical design collaboration for sustainable mindsets, bringing you change makers, innovators, and sustainable leaders who have positively impacted the industry. It's time to get inspired, motivated, and fired up to take action towards a greener planet. Here's your host, Mike Brown.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the 3P Theory podcast. Today, I have a very special guest with us, Jason Gregory, who has really made an impact with Energy RM in the industry as it relates to opportunities for buildings, facility managers, and owners that I'd like to share with you guys today. And we want to welcome him to the show. Welcome, Jason.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's start off with a little bit about the background of Energy RM and kind of a little bit about your experience as well and how you got into this role.
Yeah, certainly. So I'll give you a quick Energy RM flyover and then talk about my background. But Energy RM is a software company based on the West Coast in Portland, Oregon. And from a mission perspective, we exist to unlock investment in deep energy efficiency at scale. And we do that in the commercial built environment. The depth of energy efficiency, when we talk about deep energy efficiency, is important. We define that as 25% reduction in consumption or greater, which is really our benchmark for how we prioritize our investment in our product and our sales and marketing efforts, really going after partners and customers who would be solving for deep retrofits as opposed to more shallow ones. You know, when we look at the commercial built environment, we see a host of misaligned economic interests that have held back investment in deep energy efficiency for a long period of time. This looks like tenants who don't improve spaces that they occupy because they just don't own, they don't own the building, nor do they have access often to the mechanical equipment that might be needed to be upgraded. Owners who don't invest in efficiency primarily because all of the benefit from an energy efficiency upgrade flows to the tenant in the form of lower energy bills, and they can't really pay themselves back. And then you have many forms of ESCO contracts that are often dilutive to a building's balance sheet, which complicates building acquisition or disposition. So there are other parties involved often, whether it's a utility or another participant with further misaligned economic interests, but I'll maybe spare you from continuing to talk on that topic. But as a software company, we sort of asked ourselves, what can we do to bring alignment in economic interests across all of those parties? And we do that with our platform, which consists of both a software component as well as an investment structure for owner or third-party investment in deep energy efficiency, particularly the monetization of energy efficiency outcomes. So our software really is focused in three areas. The first area is delivering insights about a building's energy performance across all fuels or all energy sources that serve the building with enough fidelity to provide end-use breakdowns and other energy performance insights about how a building consumes energy. We, through that modeling engine, as we deliver insights, are also able to construct optimized models of buildings, how they might perform post-retrofit. And what's really special here with this part of our software platform is that we have a patented modeling engine that uses very little input data about a building and returns a physical or thermodynamic model of a building. So we're not just doing simple benchmarking, we're not just comparing to some kind of averages, we're actually constructing a physical or thermodynamic model of a building, which allows us to deliver things remotely that are typically impossible to do. The second part of our platform is metering. We have a product called the Delta Meter, which is a transactable investment grade energy efficiency meter that our customers use to transact the value of energy efficiency on an array of performance-based projects and contracts. And the third component is all about settling the financial transaction. So beyond metering, how is the rest of that contract enabled from a software point of view?
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm definitely familiar with a couple of those models that you mentioned before. You know, ESCOs can be very helpful, especially when you have owners and tenants who may not have a lot of that upfront capital to kind of offset some of the costs by paying that back through the savings. So by adding on this piece, I can definitely see how that's, you know, really being able to maximize some of the benefit there. One of the questions, which you kind of mentioned it or alluded to it earlier, is it seems like this is definitely, or at least what you're seeing is this is definitely more applicable to existing building retrofits as opposed to new construction. Is that the case? Or is there any opportunity for that from a post-occupancy standpoint on new construction?
Yeah, I think you're right to say that maybe more of our focus is on existing buildings and improving the commercial building stock. You know, as we look across the commercial building stock domestically, at least it's the largest untapped sector for efficiency. And that's been held back for the reasons we've already discussed. There certainly is applicability, though, for new construction. Interestingly, one of our very first pilot projects several years back was a building in Seattle called the Bullitt Center, which is electric only, no gas service to the building, was new construction and was net zero construction. So a very, very green building with on-site renewables. And the counterparty on this contract wasn't an ESCO, it was actually the utility. So this was Seattle City Light. Piloting a transaction structure called MEETS, or the Metered Energy Efficiency Transaction Structure. And our Delta Meter is the transactable energy efficiency meter that meters the energy efficiency production from that building in partnership with the utility in such a way that the utility then delivers a bill to the building that consists of the traditional energy delivered as well as the value of the energy efficiency that the utility had procured from the building on a 20-year power purchase agreement. So a really innovative model. As far as the metering of a new construction building, you obviously don't have the historical consumption patterns to reference to construct a baseline against which energy efficiency can be metered. And in that scenario, what we do is construct a composite baseline of similar buildings in the same climate zone, preferably the same, you know, the same metropolitan area served by the same utilities. And, you know, this building was unique in that it was, again, electric only. And when we're looking for electric only buildings built to the same building code vintage in the same climate zone, there aren't as many to choose from as you might find if it was a gas and electric served building. But we were able to do it in Seattle under review of both the utility, a third-party consultant that the utility had retained, as well as a university building science lab. We're all kind of reviewing the methodology we used to construct that baseline and found it to be very sound for that purpose. And so that's really the methodology we carry forward to other new construction projects.
I see. Yeah, so that's kind of, you can almost describe that as your ideal candidate for the most part if you're looking for a procurement or collaborating with a particular facility, which it makes sense. And I want to come back to what you said earlier about, you know, existing buildings being one of the largest pieces of the building stock and largest opportunity in the built environment to be able to have an impact. There's actually a graphic, which I can share with you after this, that I saw that talked about, you know, if all of the new constructed buildings were built to net zero, you know, from here on out, we would still be kind of behind the eight ball in terms of where we need to be with energy efficiency targets if we do not focus on existing buildings.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really
important. Yeah, I think one of the interesting things with both new construction as well as existing construction, existing buildings, is the thing that's holding back deep energy efficiency is not always the lack of suitable equipment, you know, technologies to be installed in a building. You know, we know how to insulate buildings well. We know how to build and manufacture highly efficient equipment. But the question that remains unanswered in many of these cases is how do you justify the additional expense to build or retrofit a building in such a way that would skew that graphic that you're talking about to where we're actually meeting the goals that we've established and do so in such a way that generates returns on invested capital, where energy efficiency can be looked at as a financial investment in addition to the energy efficiency and carbon reduction outcomes that are really a simultaneous result of that investment.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm sure at this point, you guys have been able to capture a lot of data in terms of usage and trends and things of that nature. What are some of the trends that you're seeing? And I would say, especially for well, kind of coming back to what I mentioned before about the new construction buildings and just piggybacking on what you mentioned earlier about being able to operate the building, even if it's, you know, built to be, you know, high efficiency, high performance, yet from day one, you know, turnover of the building, even for retrofits, same scenario, you'd have to make sure that, you know, the building operation manager, facilities manager is on board and understands how that equipment operates, what type of set points need to be tuned in to make sure that it's still performing, you know, whether it's 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the line. Have you guys been able to kind of circumvent some major hiccups based on some of the trending data that you've been able to capture from that perspective?
Yeah. It's a really good question. And that really, in our vernacular, kind of points back to the risk to capital. So if you're let's say you're a large real estate investment trust or a private equity firm with a large real estate position, and you want to retrofit, deep retrofit a number of your existing buildings, and then go one step further, whatever that might be for any new construction buildings, and you need to have an innovative transaction model to monetize the energy efficiency. You know, the owner, the portfolio owner in that case, would be asking, well, what's my risk exposure? You know, is it tied to the occupancy, or is it, you know, tenancy risk? Is it performance risk of the equipment itself? Is it operations risk? You know, going back to set points and things like that are more informed by behavior than, you know, the performance of mechanical equipment. And the answer is that it's a really big area of risk that has been traditionally hard to overcome. So you're right in saying that the facilities manager of a building needs to be on board with both the knowledge and the rationale behind a certain plan. When we look at a investment structure that's enabled by EnergyRM, that investment structure is comprised of a series of agreements that define how the investment will be made in the building. And it's a multi-party agreement with the source of capital, whether it's owner capital or third-party capital, and the SPV or the LLC, right, that would hold the real property asset. That's just one example of an agreement that's part of the structure. One of the other really key ones is the O&M plan and the O&M agreement that flows from the project developer into a sustainable O&M mode, where contractually there needs to be some kind of recourse for non-conformance with that plan between the source of capital and whoever is performing that function. So, you know, one of the things that EnergyRM is not doing is building software that is entirely focused on the operator of the building. We provide, in a sense, an early warning system for all of the stakeholders to look at whole building performance, looking at trends. We construct models that are reflective of the building's expected performance post-retrofit, and will alert parties when the building's actual performance drifts. So in that sense, we're really focusing on a continuous commissioning and a persistence. And then the actual execution of the O&M plan isn't our responsibility. It's really that of the O&M vendor or on-site facilities manager. But it's all part of ensuring project success, which looks like ongoing delivery of produced energy efficiency from that investment in such a way that you can monetize and do so reliably.
I see. Okay. No, that definitely makes more sense. I can see that, you know, from a transition standpoint, how, just because I think about the scenarios where you have an existing building where there's like maybe a third party O&M team versus kind of a dedicated O&M team for maybe that portfolio or a subset of buildings, maybe in the area. Have you really seen a big difference in those two structures and whether or not facilities have been able to maintain or achieve some of these targets, or does it just vary across the board?
Yeah, I think there's variability. And part of it, I think, depends on how many buildings are part of the portfolio that's been retrofitted as part of a single grouping of investments. You know, if it's one building, that's one thing. If it's 100 buildings, that's another thing. When we look at larger programmatic retrofits, there's typically a role that's a project developer that would be the quarterback or the project manager for all projects, but wouldn't necessarily have on-site responsibility to implement the projects. That would be potentially a regional effort, in different states or even more broadly. And that project developer role, in at least my personal opinion, would be an ideal candidate to continue on post-implementation and have responsibility for O&M oversight, whether that's in partnership with an on-site facilities manager or, a national engineering firm who does that for, hundreds of buildings in most metropolitan markets. It just creates a role almost like an owner's rep, representing the source of capital to ensure that risk of building underperformance as a result of lack of adherence to an O&M plan is kind of less of a consideration.
I see. Okay. You mentioned earlier about the MEATS Accelerator program. Are there similar programs like that buildings can leverage across the country? Or is this something that's specific to a particular region?
Yeah. So the Metered Energy Efficiency Transaction Structure, MEATS, is a transaction model that a group of industry actors, whether it's ESCOs or sources of capital or software companies like us, have come together to really drive into the market in partnership with utilities. That group is led by an executive director. His name is Rob Harmon. He's a great guy, very passionate about the greening of the commercial building stock. Mm-hmm. And that methodology, that transaction structure, is made available through the coalition to really anybody who would want to use it and be a member of that coalition. Again, it's primarily focused on utilities. So the end consumer of that transaction structure would be a utility who might want to enter into a power purchase agreement with a commercial building to procure the energy efficiency that an investment would produce. So in that sense, it's a truly meter-based transaction model. And what's really interesting about it, as well as what EnergyRM is doing with our investment structure, but it is that it changes the paradigm. There isn't any language that's a part of MEATS that would talk about savings. It's all talking about energy efficiency, production or yield, or even to call it efficiency energy, where it becomes a peer to wind energy and solar energy, where efficiency energy is just a resource that can be transacted and not something that ratepayer dollars are used to buy down the costs of projects and equipment. So for MEATS, there isn't any utility incentive involved. It's really a meter-based procurement with EnergyRM's Delta Meter as the meter for energy efficiency.
I see. Okay. And with that, I mean, I know you mentioned the Delta Meter and some of the other metrics that you're able to capture. Have there been any kind of project-specific or unique requests from owners in terms of what they're wanting to see? I know you mentioned, or at least I've seen some of the examples of dashboards and things of that nature that have been developed. What does that look like from a front-end perspective? Because I know you mentioned that, you're able to kind of circumvent and kind of get alerts or alarms when things start to deviate from predicted or estimated savings for retrofit and things of that nature. Are there any kind of unique cases where, out of the blue, they've asked for something that's out of the norm?
Yeah, good, really good question. I want to preface my answer to that by saying we don't see ourselves as competitive with any automation or controls or monitoring systems that would be used within a building to monitor equipment level performance. And so when we talk about flagging variances and things of that nature, it's on a whole facility level, in some cases down to end uses and fuels. But then we know that every project and oftentimes, even facility manager to facility manager, there are preferred systems for use within the building. And we want to be, in really all cases, complementary as opposed to competitive with those systems that may already be in use. The cases that are interesting, to answer your question, I think it's less about the ongoing metering because once that gets set up, it's a really tight process. And we've learned over time what are the right kinds of things to display and report, both digitally as well as in energy efficiency statements that our software produces that look very much like a utility statement, but really account for the energy efficiency. So I feel like we do a good job there. Some of the things that become more challenging for us, and I don't say challenging like we can't do it, but challenging like it's a new case, is when we have really interesting buildings that are very unique and we're needing to predict or create an optimized, a virtual optimized model of that building. Like how might it perform to say how much energy efficiency potential exists within that building, down to end use categories and across all fuels. Some of the more interesting ones, I mean, I already mentioned that building in Seattle. It is interesting that it's net zero, it's new construction, and it's electric only. It's unlike many, many other buildings. One of the other ones that was interesting, we have a contract to meter the energy efficiency performance from a retrofit at an NFL stadium, which is really interesting. Because a stadium performs very differently and is operated and occupied very differently than a commercial office tower or a medical office building or other more common building types. So I think where we've been putting some of our attention from a R&D perspective is how can we help some of those fringe cases get a better handle on existing facility performance in those sort of abnormal operating modes. And then bringing more certainty to how might you approach a deep retrofit, given the uniqueness of those facilities.
No, that's great. I'm glad you brought that up. I was actually talking to a group of colleagues the other day about that particular building typology in general with stadiums and kind of venues. Because when you think about at least the data that's available right now, whether it's looking at the CBECS Commercial Building Energy Consumption Survey and Energy Star and things of that nature, for that particular subset is very limited, right? And then even within that subset, you have so many variations of building types. And you've got bowling alleys in there. You've got, aquatic centers. You got stadiums. You got all these things that, have very, very different usage and profiles and things of that nature. And it makes it hard to really pinpoint and benchmark. And I'm purely thinking about that from a new construction standpoint, but even from an existing building, if you're able to look at some of that before capturing some of the actual utility bill data and things of nature to kind of get a feel for, am I in the ballpark for a similar building, within my region or things of that nature. And I think it's really valuable that you guys are starting to capture more of that. And there's been some stuff published by, I think, the Green Sports Alliance. Obviously, that's more holistic because it talks about, water and waste and so on and so forth. But that's actually one of the more interesting building types that I'm looking forward to getting into. So.
Yeah. And I think what's really special about what we're doing at EnergyRM is the approach to modeling. Our modeling engine, as I mentioned earlier, is not purely a statistical model. It renders a physical thermodynamic model of a building, which allows you to really understand it in unique ways remotely that wouldn't be possible with a purely statistical approach where you're trying to predict future energy performance. We want to have the right type of or degree of fidelity into about 30 parameters of the building's physics that allows us to do more reliable end-use disaggregation into end-use categories, even in those unique facility types. And then as we look towards optimizing an existing building or creating a model for potentially a new construction building, having those right kinds of controls at the physics level allows us to be a lot more reliable in metering, where it becomes investment grade or transactable, but also gives you much more robust insights remotely prior to construction or a retrofit.
Okay. That also makes me think about, I'm sure some of our listeners would be curious. I know it's going to vary from building to building based on the project size and scope, but typically, for a retrofit project, say maybe you've got all the components in terms of, MEP, lighting, mechanical, so on and so forth. what's the kind of timeline for from start to finish, and kind of what are some of the stages where you all are involved throughout the process?
Yeah, maybe I'll start by mentioning our two predominant customer types, and that would be portfolio owners of large commercial real estate portfolios as one. And then the second would be energy service companies who are implementing projects and would use our technology in a more pointed way to, you know, carry their existing work forward. So the life cycle with large commercial real estate portfolio owners is typically a project life cycle that starts with project identification, you know, building identification, retrofit identification, and identifying the source of capital, and then moving through an analytical phase where we're using our software to look across large building fleets to model every individual building, but then rolling that up to portfolio-wide analytics that'll allow us to parse that portfolio into the places that, you know, need the most attention first. And, you know, we support that part of the project lifecycle. It then goes into a development phase where there's an on-site audit and a project or retrofit that's implemented in a building. You know, as a software company, we don't go and do that work in the building. We have certified project development partners who are large national firms with deep engineering and project management bunches that help implement those projects when our customer doesn't already have a preferred vendor for that. Mm-hmm. And then it comes back to us post-retrofit for the ongoing metering and financial settlement of that contract and of that project. And that can be anywhere from 5 to 20 years in the production term where the energy efficiency is being monetized. So that's kind of part one. The other part would be with energy service companies who would use our software most likely on the front end to do to deliver insights to their customers in almost a lead generation capacity, right? We have ESCO customers who, prior to setting foot in buildings, request the necessary input data from those prospective customers, buildings, to run the modeling engine in our software. And they then turn around and deliver those insights to their prospective building customer as a way to really accelerate that pre-contract award process. We also have ESCO customers who continue from that point. You know, they develop a project and then they use our Delta meter, our energy efficiency meter, to meter the outcomes from the project, whether it's, you know, meets or our transaction model or something entirely different. And maybe sometimes it's not a transaction structure or an investment model. It might just be ongoing monitoring of performance so that they can intervene when the building drifts over the contract term. So,
which is a big value
question there.
Which is a big value. No, you did. Which is a big value to them because, you know, they're able to kind of get ahead of things before they cut into maybe some of the potential savings or profit that they're able to gain on that project by not realizing that, right?
That's right. And I know a lot of ESCOs rely on sensors and submeters to bring a different level of fidelity to equipment level or circuit level energy performance.
Definitely.
And we really see what we're doing here as a complement to that. You know, there's only so much you can see with data loggers and on-site hardware. It's very equipment and circuit level. And there's only so much that you can see at a whole facility level, right? You can answer a lot of the questions, but not all. And when they work together, we're able to see things on a whole facility basis, particularly interactions between fuels, that become very difficult to see if you rely on a sensor and submeter only approach. So in that sense, we have some ESCOs customers who are, you know, really bringing those two approaches together to deliver, you know, a really compelling solution for their end customers.
No, that's great. I love to hear, you know, stories like that. And it makes me think about some of the, it makes me think about, you know, how far the building industry has come in terms of being able to capture a lot of this data and be able to use it to inform design, inform decisions and things of that nature. However, beyond that, where do you see kind of the evolution within building intelligence and artificial intelligence to be able to help kind of with this particular process or help it improve?
Yeah. So, you know, we are using AI today. Really, our core algorithms in that modeling engine is an application of artificial intelligence in the self-solving nature of how it executes. So we're putting time and attention to a couple areas that would be kind of an evolution of what we're already doing based on the data that's already on our platform and other data that we have access to. Part one is really around the optimization engine within our software. So the creation of a proposed project for a building down to those end-use categories. I see a relatively near-term future where that capability is dramatically improved. It performs as build today, but I think there's all kinds of really interesting modeling and insights that we can deliver as the technology matures. I think the second place is on predictive analytics when we see a variance in a building. You know, a trained energy engineer, building scientist can look at building energy signatures and other input data and make judgments about what might be happening, what might be a likely root cause, so sort of like a hypothesis about the building underperformance. And we do a little bit of that today. I see a not too distant future where we do a lot more of that, where we have an application of either machine learning or other decision algorithm that helps our customers rather know where to begin a resolution process to resolve building underperformance. And I think that then ties in really nicely with different, you know, building automation or management systems and other software that might be in use by the building directly to really accelerate that process.
That definitely makes sense. And going back to what you mentioned before about the project development partners, I really love that strategy or approach just because I think a lot of, you know, individuals, they tend to try and do a lot of this on their own, but it really takes, you know, a larger team and having that collaboration and support, especially for you guys. You know, you mentioned that you do a lot of this remote. So especially how things are going right now, that's probably a benefit to you all for sure. And not having to do a lot of that on-site stuff. But, you know, it's really interesting just to see the progression, especially on the retrofit side and kind of some of the opportunities that are available with innovative technologies, things like this. And I think our listeners will really benefit from being able to take a deep dive into this. And I'll share some of the graphics as well that you guys have available just so they can look at that. But we loved and enjoyed having you today. Definitely want to collaborate here in the near future. I know there's some stuff that I want to go back and take a look at to bounce some ideas off of you, but we really enjoyed having you today.
Yeah, certainly. Mike, thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to 3P Theory with Mike Brown. If you like our show and want to know more, check out 3ptheory.com or please leave us a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. Join us next time for more insightful knowledge on high performance building design.